The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
So my wife and I joined the Peace Corps when we were 63 years old. And some Americans may say, the Peace Corps, is that even still there? And the answer is, yes, it is. And then usually it's, but isn't that just for people in their 20s? And the answer to that is, well, a majority of the volunteers are still in their 20s as they were when President Kennedy started the Peace Corps back in 1961. But every year, hundreds of older Americans sign up as well, and we were among them.
Welcome to the Repurpose Your Career podcast, brought to you by Career Pivot. This podcast is where those of us in the second half of life come together to discuss how to repurpose our careers for the 21st century. Come listen to career experts give you proven strategies. Listen to people like you tell their stories on how they repurpose their careers. And finally, get your questions answered. Your host, Mark Miller, has made six career pivots over the last 30 years. He understands this is not about jumping out of the frying pan into a fire, but rather to create a plan where you make clear, actionable steps or pivots to a better future career. Are you ready to repurpose your career?
Welcome to episode 172 of the Repurpose Your Career podcast. My name is Mark Miller, and I'll be your host every Monday for discussion on what it's like to repurpose your career. If you're new to the Repurpose Your Career podcast, I want to welcome you to the episode. Before we get into the show, I have an ask to make. If you listen to this on Apple Podcasts, would you write a review or give us a rating? If you are finding this podcast useful, please tell a friend, or maybe tell a lot of your friends. The more people we reach, the more people we can help. I've started a new initiative, which is an open community call over Zoom and Facebook Live. We're just getting together once a week to discuss how we're dealing with this COVID-19 pandemic. I know a lot of you are feeling pretty isolated and alone. The calls are open to the public at noon Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Central Time. And you can register for the next scheduled call at careerpivot.com/Zoom or find the Career Pivot Facebook page and give it a like so you'll be informed when the Facebook session goes live. We will hold these every Monday until we're done through with this pandemic. Next week, I'm going to give you an update on what it's like to be an expat in Mexico during the COVID-19 pandemic. This week, I have David Jarmel, who authored the book, Not Exactly Retired, A Life-Changing Journey on the Road and in the Peace Corps. Let me read you David's bio. David is a writer and world traveler whose blog has been read in more than 100 countries. He was head of news and communications at Duke University for many years, held senior communications positions at Howard Hughes Medical Institute and the National Academy of Sciences, an honors graduate of Brown University and past president of the DC Science Writers Association. He also worked as an editor for an international development organization, a writer for Voice of America, and a reporter for a business newspaper. His previous books are Headline News, Science Views, and Plain Talk, Clear Communication for an International Development. David has traveled throughout the world and in all 50 states. He served as a Peace Corps volunteer in Nepal, where he met his wife, Champa, and with her in Moldova, Eastern Europe. They live in Durham, North Carolina. I hope you enjoy this episode. Welcome to the Repurpose Your Career podcast. I have the joy of having David Jarmel on the podcast, and he is the author of Not Exactly Retired, A Life-Changing Journey on the Road in the Peace Corps. Welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Mark. It's such a pleasure to be with you today.
For my listeners, David was interviewed by Andy Levine on Second Act Stories, and I'll put a link to that in the podcast notes. But I kind of wanted to get started because your book is interesting. And I like to say it's interesting, and it is an interesting word. So what was the impetus behind you writing this book?
So my wife and I joined the Peace Corps when we were 63 years old. And some Americans may say, the Peace Corps, is that even still there? And the answer is, yes, it is. And then usually it's, but isn't that just for people in their 20s? And the answer to that is, well, a majority of the volunteers are still in their 20s as they were when President Kennedy started the Peace Corps back in 1961. But every year, hundreds of older Americans sign up as well, and we were among them. And just in my group in Eastern Europe, we served in a small country of Moldova. In my group, we had a number of older volunteers who had previously worked as real estate brokers, IT executives. There was a city manager, a professor from Howard University, and a number of others. They were quite normal people, normal Americans, so it wasn't a crazy thing to do. But I think all of us felt that we wanted to give back and we wanted to pursue an adventure at this stage of our life.
But why did you write the book?
I wrote the book because while I was serving as a volunteer, I was actively blogging and I ended up having readers in more than 100 countries. And people, I think, who among the readers, a number of them said to me that they were inspired to think about their own lives, even if it wasn't to join the Peace Corps, but to think again about how they could embrace the next stage of their life. And a lot of people said, gee, I ought to write a book. So when we came back, that's what I decided to do.
So this is your second time in the Peace Corps. Why don't you tell my listeners about your first time?
I first served in the Peace Corps in the late 1970s when I was pretty fresh out of college, and I served for 2 years in Nepal in the Himalaya Mountains. And I was posted to a small town in the Himalayas where I was teaching English, and I fell in love with one of the other teachers at the school. Her name is Champa. We fell in love. We ended up getting married, and this past summer we celebrated our 40th anniversary together. So we made an interesting couple to serve in the Peace Corps now because Champa was actually taught by Peace Corps volunteers when she was growing up. So she had a pretty strong tie to the organization, as did I, because I at this point owed my wife and my family to the Peace Corps. So we always felt that if the stars aligned, that when we got to this point in our life, that we would try to go serve. And so that's what we were able to do.
What was different this time versus your previous experience in the Peace Corps?
So Nepal and Moldova are two very different countries. Nepal is obviously a Hindu-Buddhist country in the Himalayas, and Moldova is an Orthodox Christian country in Eastern Europe. So that's for starters. But the world has changed a lot since the 1970s. And as far as being a Peace Corps volunteer, when I was in Nepal, I was really disconnected from my family and from the rest of the world. I didn't even have a phone call for 2 years. While I was in Moldova, I had a good internet connection so I could watch YouTube and watch the comedy shows from the night before. Security was a much bigger issue than it used to be. This is all post 9/11, even though Moldova is quite a safe place to live. For me, probably the biggest change actually was that I was serving as a married volunteer and I had my best friend with me as opposed to being by myself. And that was a really change. It was a nice change.
You started being a Peace Corps volunteer after you retired. Now, you were a bigwig at Duke, right?
Well, I don't know how big, but I was the head. I was the head. Mike Krzyzewski is the big wig at Duke. Let's get everything straight. Our best famous basketball coach. I was the head of news and communications at Duke for 14 years. So yeah, I had a pretty responsible job, and I love my job. You know, some people say, oh, "I'm gonna take this job and shove it. I can't wait to get out." It's not at all how I felt. I actually really enjoyed what I was doing. I love my colleagues. I just had a voice in my heart saying that there's something else you want to do with your life. And it took me a long time after I left to kind of readjust my head. My identity was so tied up in my job that it took some time for me to begin to rethink who I am. But that was, I knew that was coming, and I welcomed that process.
So who is David today?
Well, I'd say David today is someone I think of myself more as a writer and a volunteer. Just this morning, I was working on some things trying to get volunteers to respond to the coronavirus outbreak, and I work on a big volunteer project to assist Moldova, the country where we served, and some other things. I'm still writing, and I'm still very friendly with a lot of people that I knew at Duke from my previous life. It's I'm not caught up in that day-to-day the way I was previously.
So when you arrived in Moldova, how hard was it to going through the training and then actually getting to your outpost?
Yeah, I'm not going to lie to you, Mark. It was pretty hard. I mean, Peace Corps training is very rigorous, not just where we serve, but around the world. You have 2 or 3 months of intensive language training, by which I mean 4 or 5 hours every morning in a small class, a short break, and that this was in a room that got up to 100 degrees on chairs that weren't terribly comfortable. Then we had a short break, and then we had an afternoon filled with cultural training and job training for the jobs we were going to be doing. And I was surrounded mainly by people younger than our 2 sons, who at this point in my life learn language faster than I do. So that was a bit frustrating, but I really plugged away at it and eventually became pretty good at the local language. Training is demanding. I would say it's deliberately so. In some ways, it's like boot camp in the military. They put you through a pretty tough process, but when you come out at the other end, you're really ready to raise your hand and swear in.
Now, did many people wash out and not make it through the training?
We had quite a few who washed out during training, and then during the 2 years that followed, I lost quite a few of our colleagues. They would have family emergencies back home, or they got sick, or they got into trouble in one way or another. Most of the people made it through for 2 years, but some did not.
And I'm presuming you weren't one of those who got drunk and made the Peace Corps look bad.
Oh, come on, Mark.
No. Yeah, When I was reading the book, that was one thing of... You talked about one festival you weren't allowed to go to because your director was all worried about imbibing too much alcohol.
Well, Ciampa and I did enjoy the local wine. Moldova used to be part of the Soviet Union, and it was the wine-growing area of the Soviet Union. So where we lived, everybody made wine in both of our families during training. And then with the host family that we lived with for 2 years, they would make wine. My wife, Ciampa, helped them make that year's batch. And we would have it sometimes, but I think we kept it under control.
Well, as we age, we get, it's kind of like when my son went off to college and he told me the one time he ended up with his head in the toilet at 3 a.m. as a freshman. And I told him, you need to do that 3 more times.
Yeah, that's not the cross-cultural experience that we're trying to do to help people understand Americans, at least not on a good day. Actually, one of our favorite things was in the evening. So we lived with a host family in the small city where we were posted, and they had essentially the grandmother, who was well into her 80s when we were there. And she became like a mother to us. This woman was so dear to us, and she was still working, and we would all come home in the evening. And when things settled down, we would often, Ciampa and I would just sit with her and have a glass of wine and a piece of cake and talk about the day. And those were moments that we just treasured, and we miss her a lot now.
Tell us about what was your job there?
Mm-hmm. So my wife, Ciampa, taught English at the local school, and I worked briefly at what amounted to the county government before ending up in what became my job for almost 2 years, which was I worked at the local library. I had stopped by there just to say hi when we moved to the town, and one thing led to another, and I ended up volunteering there and then being posted there. At the library, I helped them start a robotics club and a club for learning computer coding. We created a family room for moms in the town where they could hang out with their kids. We did a number of communications projects. We overhauled their website. We started using infographics, making videos for the library. So we did all kinds of projects. And in addition, I had some projects outside of the library. I worked with the national tourism industry on some educational materials that they could use. I taught some news writing and journalism classes at a local English center, and I produced a music video with a local singer. We made a music video about the city where we were that went viral and ended up being featured on national television. So I was busy, and CHOPPA also had a number of projects. So we stayed really busy for 2 years, and we loved it.
That was the one thing I was really impressed with, the fact that you did so many different projects, and it seemed like you got to use a lot of your skills that you had acquired over the years.
It was, I would say it was a balance. In some ways, I wish I could have done even more of that, of things that call more directly from my own background as a communications person. But that was also the fun of it, of working in a library and doing something. Like, I have no background in robotics or computer coding, so I was learning it on the fly, trying to stay one step ahead of these bright 13-year-olds. But that's what Peace Corps challenges you to do. You have to stretch, not just in terms of language and your cultural training, but in the kinds of jobs you're doing. And, you find resources in yourself that you may not have known were there, but that's what the deal is. And I found it very stimulating.
Now a word from our sponsor, Career Pivot. The Career Pivot membership community continues to help the approximately 50 members who are participating in the beta phase of this project to grow and thrive. This is a community where everyone is there to help everyone else out. This is a group of like-minded souls where over half are over 60 and a third are over 65 who are working to figure out what they want to do in the second half of life and then make it happen. I price this very affordable for anyone. Do not let financial considerations and getting in the way of checking this out. I'm recruiting new members for the next cohort. If you are interested in learning more about the endeavor, please go to careerpivot.com/community. Now, back to the interview with David. Was there one thing in your time, in the 2 years you were there, that you really stood out as that you could go, wow, I did something really valuable?
You know, I'm actually going to cite one thing that my wife, CHOPPA, did, which was she worked with one of the other teachers at her school on a project to create a wardrobe of costumes and props for the school's drama program. She went to the school and said, hey, should we do a big project together? And she thought that they were going to say what most schools say to their Peace Corps volunteer, which is like, let's build a new classroom or do a new playground or something like that. And instead, she was very surprised that the school drama teacher stepped forward and said they had a very active drama program. And we had gone to some of their performances. But it's a poor country. They have no money for costumes. And she said, you know, our budget is always the first thing that gets cut every year. It's not so different from back here where the arts get cut quickly. And she said, this is our one chance to actually do right by the kids. And so the principal went along with it. So long story short, they ended up creating more than 40 glorious costumes, like for Romeo and Juliet and kings and judges and all kinds of different characters. And when they unveiled it, there was a big thing at the school where the governor came, the mayor came, the American ambassador came. It was like a really big deal. And they were so happy and the kids were so excited. CHOPPA practiced her speech in Romanian again and again. And it was a day that we'll never forget. It was just a moment. We knew she knew she had made a difference, and that will always stay in our hearts.
So if I remember correctly, you raised money for the fabric. Is that correct? And then local people actually did all the sewing?
Yeah, that's right. So there was a small grant that CHOPPA got through the Peace Corps. It was just a few thousand dollars. And they used that money mainly to buy the fabric and the buttons and the glitter and all the stuff you need for the costumes. And to buy the props. Those were mainly bought. But otherwise, the community stepped up and they sewed the costumes.
Plan on going back and doing it again?
You know, Mark, we're not going to go back and do it again. We don't think we could leave our family again for 2 years. That was really the hardest thing. We have 7 grandkids, and we stayed in touch with them all the time by Skype and otherwise, but it wasn't the same as getting a real hug. And we really missed them, and I think they missed us. So I don't think so. But I hasten to add, you know, we treasured every moment that we did it. And while we were there, we kept saying to ourselves, we hope that one day our grandkids, when they get older, will look at this and, you know, maybe be inspired and with the values in their own life of trying to help others. So no regrets at all. But at least in our case, I think once was enough.
And you did a lot of traveling, personal traveling while you were over there. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
We did. We traveled to a lot of countries that are near Moldova over in Eastern Europe. So Bulgaria, Romania, Armenia, Georgia, Ukraine, a little further to the west, Vienna, Budapest, places like that. And so, you know, Vienna, Budapest, maybe some Americans have gone there. The others, maybe not so much. And I'll tell you what the feeling was like. So we had a great time. It was really cheap. It was really safe. We always found people who could speak English. And we just had a blast. We had a really good time. We stayed in, you know, inexpensive hotels or Airbnbs. And I felt like somebody who goes to an ice cream store that has lots of flavors. And the Americans are only ordering chocolate and vanilla because they don't ever try the other flavors. And I felt kind of that way when we were traveling. Like I wanted to say, hey, fellow Americans, come, you know, like Tbilisi, Georgia, what a great city to visit. And so forth to some of the other places we visited, Transylvania and Romania, which I think is going to be one of the great next tourist places. It's just a wonderful place. So much to see. The restaurants were great. People were very friendly and very few Americans. So we were glad that we had the opportunity. It certainly changed how we think about our own traveling going forward.
I've been quite blessed. I've worked in 40 different countries around the world, and you get a different feel for when you know how to culturally integrate.
Yeah. I mean, do you ever have that same feeling, Mark, that look, I've also gone to London and Paris. We've been very fortunate that we've been able to do that. And you know, that's great, too. I'm not in any way knocking it. I'm just saying that I wish people would expand their imagination a little bit. If they're lucky enough to have that opportunity, because there's a big world out there.
As I said, I've worked in these places, which says I've gotten a different view of, I've gotten to know people who were, my business partners and my young field engineers. You get to know them and they share things with you. Particularly, I used to go in and out of China pretty frequently in the early part of the 2000s. And it was a very different experience than going on a tour.
Yeah. And I bet your life is richer for it.
Oh, very much so. I can imagine that you now have friends for life in Moldova.
We do. You know, notably our host family, but others as well. I've traded messages with two or three of them just today before I got on the phone call.
And you have a very different view of how it's kind of like when I used to go to China and Korea, I claimed the more I understood them, the less I understood them.
Yeah.
Because the cultures are so different.
Yeah, we are different in many ways and our cultures are different. But, you know, you and I are talking here at the end of March and the coronavirus is spreading around the world. And to me, it's a reminder that we're all human beings on this planet and we're all, you know, dealing with this together. And to me, at least, it's a reminder of the humanity that we share.
When you came back, were you changed? And if you were changed, how?
I think I was changed. I think I'm more flexible, hopefully a little more patient. I certainly am not as wedded to the clock and to my planner as I was before. That's a function probably of not working 9 to 5 like I was, or 9 to 10. I'd go back to what I said before, which is I feel like my sense of self and my sense of identity is not as wrapped up in the job that I had held for so long, that I have a sense of myself as separate from that. And I think that's a good thing.
Yeah. I claim when we go through these experiences, we change our mindset.
Yeah.
And how we view ourselves and how we view the world. Mm-hmm. And if you're willing to shift that mindset, you will experience so much more.
Well, you talk a lot about pivot, Mark, and that's what we did. And I really agree with that. I want to be clear that, you know, the message of my book is not, hey, go join the Peace Corps. Some people want to do that, and I think that's great. After they hear this, maybe some people will look into it. But I know that people have personal circumstances or elderly parents or kids who still have needs or whatever it is that may hold them back, or they just may not be interested. So that's not my message. My message is rather embrace the next phase of your life, look into your heart, and try to think of it as what is it that you really want to do, and then have the courage to do it. And if it seems too daunting, then try to find ways to make some smaller steps, some smaller changes that you might do as a way to kick the tires emotionally and then move forward.
So if you had one piece of advice for someone our age, and you and I are about the same age, about joining the Peace Corps, what would that one piece of advice be?
Be unafraid and don't think that it's strange, because it's not. As I said earlier, this is something that hundreds of older Americans do every year. Since President Kennedy started the Peace Corps, nearly a quarter of a million Americans have served in the Peace Corps, including quite a few older Americans. So this is, in some ways, a well-trod path. You have a whole structure behind you. You've got medical help and diplomatic help if you get into trouble, and just, you know, there's a whole enterprise you're joining that's going to take good care of you. And it's an adventure you'll never forget. And it's a chance to be of service if you are, like me, lucky enough to have had some blessings as an American.
So if someone wanted to get a hold of your book and wanted to reach out and touch you, how might they do that?
Oh, bless your heart, Mark. So the book is Not Exactly Retired, A Life-Changing Journey on the Road and in the Peace Corps. It's available for sale online and Amazon and through indie bookstores and anywhere where people might buy books. And they can contact me through the book's website, which is notexactlyretiredbook.com.
Well, David, this has been great. I very much appreciate having you on the Repurpose Your Career podcast.
Mark, thanks so much for having me. And I thank all of your listeners for spending some time together.
I hope you enjoyed that episode. David and I are about the same age, and I actually thought about joining the Peace Corps when David did. I did not pull the trigger like David. Feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn. Look for Career Pivot on Facebook and LinkedIn. You'll also find me on Twitter at Career Pivot. Please come back next week when I give you an update on what it's like to be an expat in Mexico during the COVID-19 pandemic. Thank you for listening all the way to the end of the Repurpose Your Career podcast. You will find all the show notes at careerpivot.com/episode-172. Please hop over to careerpivot.com, subscribe to get updates on the podcast and all the other happenings at Career Pivot. You can also subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Podbeam, Overcast, Spotify, and Pandora. Hope to see you next Monday for another episode of Repurpose Your Career podcast.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.